You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Spilling Ink is brought to you by Book Branders, your self-publishing concierge.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Spilling Ink Live, the talk show that brings you behind the book to meet the authors and the artists in the publishing industry. Today, we have a very special group of guests, and we have three hosts, which we almost never have. So we have all sorts of awesomeness going on tonight. But before we introduce you to our guests, I want to give you a little word from our sponsors, which is Book Branders. Book Branders is your self-publishing concierge. They provide package, Katie, and a la carte solutions to get your book to market. From book design to editing and marketing, their team of professionals can help you successfully bring your book to market without breaking the bank. And I know that Katie has worked with Book Branders herself, and she can vouch for them being a pretty cool group of people. Is that right, Katie?
Absolutely. What they do is provide you what you need to publish. They don't tell you, we're going to give you an all-encompassing. They show you what they can do for you, and you pick and choose the items that you actually need help with.
That's awesome. And they're easy to get a hold of. You can just go to bookbranders.com, and they'll get you all set up. They'll give you a free 10-step guide to self-publishing, and yeah, so that's all good. There's tons of publishing work that I don't want to do. In fact, I actually don't want to do the publishing work. I want to do the writing work. So if you're anything like me, it might be a useful thing to give a shot to. All right, but we have some awesome guests tonight, and I am going to turn the attention over to Jane so that you can tell us who we're talking to tonight.
Hello. Tonight we have Jonathan Mayberry and Allison Pang, and Jonathan has a whole host of horror thrillers out there, from the Joe Ledger series to the Pine Deep series, and his newest V-Wars is going to be a television show on Netflix soon.
What's Netflix?
And Allison Pang has the Abby Sinclair series out there. So Jonathan and Abby, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
And tonight I wanted to, our focus tonight is on conferences, Comic-Con, Dragon-Con, and some of the other ones that you guys have been to, and what your experiences are, what you find is the best way to approach it, being on a panel. If you haven't been on a panel, what are the things you like to see? Because all three of us, Jason, Katie, and I, have been to different Comic-Cons, so we're interested in finding out your viewpoints.
You know, so, Jane, that seems like a good plan, but how about we back it up and instead we talk about pizza for the entire show and the merits of pizza and how amazing pizza is.
What's the timer on the clock? How quick did he derail us this time?
This is like 2 minutes.
So before we get into the meat of that, I want Jonathan to tell us about his latest releases and what he's doing now, and then I want Allison to go into that. So, Jonathan.
Hi. 2018 was a very, very, very busy year for me. I had four novel releases. I had Glimpse, which was a standalone horror thriller, came out in April from Macmillan. Then I had my 10th Joe Ledger novel come out, and that ended the first run of that character, and I'm actually literally now writing the first book in a new Joe Ledger series. That was in October. November, I had Still of Night, which was a post-apocalyptic thriller, fourth in my Dead of Night series. And then in December, just a couple weeks ago, I had Broken Lands, which is both the first in a new series and the seventh or the sixth in my Rotten Ruin series, depending on how you count it. It spins off a character, some characters from the original series, and also introduces some new ones. I also had Road of the Dead, which was a comic I did for IDW. The third issue comes out on Wednesday, and it was it's a prequel to the last script George Romero had written. It was going to be his last zombie. Fortunately, he passed, and George is a good friend of mine. So his widow asked me if I would do the comic, and I would say, sure. So, Those are my current new releases, and I've got a bunch of stuff coming out in 2019, so I'm busy and having a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. And we'll...
busy. I wish I was that busy. I had two releases this year. I have an indie published series called Magpies Fall, and the second book of that was released. Actually, it was Magpies Song was the first one. This is Magpies Fall. And I also had a anthology set up. I'm completely looking at other things on the computer. With Tales from the Lake, Volume 5. Is it not?
I just want to tell you that the Magpie books, the covers were amazing.
Oh, okay.
They are so badass. Oh, they are so cool.
I'll put in a plug for Regina Wamba because she's the one who did the covers for those, and she does amazing, amazing covers. So,
well, you know how when you're scrolling through thumbnails of books and stuff like that, and all of a sudden you see that one, you're just like, "Damn, I love that!" And I was like, "Oh, these are great." Yes. So I wasn't interrupting. Sorry.
Okay. No, I wasn't entirely sure. So anyway, so yes, Tales from the Lake Volume 5. I have a short story that came out in that, and that was November. And I also run a webcomic called Fox and Willow. I am the writer for that. And that was just sold to Cheezine. So hopefully in the next year or so, that will also be coming out in some kind of paperback. So.
Cool. And you wrote a pretty great story for one of my anthologies.
I did. That was, Out of Tune, right? That was, 2015?
Yeah.
I think so. I have to think back. Yes. There you go. that was basically my year, my writing year, which is not quite as awesome as Mr. Mayberry's.
Not a competition.
No.
No, it's not. No, but yeah, and in saying that, I actually published 19 novels today, all of them New York Times bestsellers. That was just today. Yesterday it was 20. Well, so I want to, the Netflix original, I'm sure you've talked to death about this, but I'm really curious about it. Can you give us just a little about this or no?
Yeah. Here's the thing. It started off as a shared world anthology. Little quick backstory for this. A couple of years ago, back in 2011, I had written a novella for an anthology of G.I. Joe stories. Max Brooks, writer of World War Z, contacted me and said he was editing it for IDW Publishing and would I write a novella for him? And it was not done, as cartoony. We were doing actual techno thriller novellas. So I jumped in, had a great time. And Max decided not to do another anthology. He was originally going to do a couple of anthologies for IDW. So when he stepped out of the next thing, they said, well, maybe you want to do something. What would you like to do? And I had a plot idea I had for something where melting polar ice releases a disease that triggers a dormant gene that makes about 5 to 10% of the human population code as vampires. And turns out it's a genetic disorder, not supernatural. And I wanted to do it as shared world. I wrote a 25,000 word framing story or 30,000 word framing story, and then brought other writers in to write individual field reports. And we did 4 volumes of that. I did 2 volumes of the 2 runs of the comic book, which are now collected in the graphic novels. And then Netflix decided they would like to do a show. So they shot 10 episode first season. I was on the set for some of it. I was watching the dailies every day. They did an amazing job. Ian Somerhalder is the star of it. And he has a very loyal fan base from his days on Vampire Diaries and Lost and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And plus we have, I think overall, the best looking cast I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, it's ridiculous. Laura Vandervoort and a few people we haven't actually announced yet who are going to raise some eyebrows when they're announced, and Adrian Holmes and so on. It's a great-looking cast, very talented, and it looks like it's going to launch somewhere in mid-2019. We're not sure exactly when they have it. Netflix plays pretty close to the vest with these things, and it's in post now. So as soon as they get an idea of when it's going to launch, they'll let me, and then you'll hear me yelling very loud.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, yeah, can you tell us a little bit, Allison, can you tell us a little bit about the 2 indie books that you put together?
It is a series. There's a third one that I'm working on right now, which will hopefully be out, but it is a mix of genres. Magpie's Song, it's a not quite fantasy steampunk with a little hint of zombie action as well. And it was one of these books that, you know, it kind of hits a lot of different genres, and it came very close to selling a couple of times. And everyone kept saying, you know, we love the concept, but, you know, our marketing department's not going to know where it fits. But the overall premise is basically you've got, you know, a main character that I based her very loosely off my daughter. And she is sort of what was that?
Your daughter a zombie?
No. She's a zombie. She's actually immune to the plague that causes these zombie things. And I don't know if my daughter is quite immune to things, but I had wanted to write a character that was similar to her. I don't really know how to explain that part of it so much, but I wanted to sort of base something for her. And what we have is like a world where we've got a floating city full of very technologically advanced people, and then you've got, yeah, like my hands up there, it's way up here. And then you have a regular city, which is very steampunk based, and this plague that's going back and forth, and you've got this group of people that are hybrids that are immune to this plague. And basically it's just how she goes about trying to fit into both these worlds and what it means that her particular group is immune. So there's a big mystery. Yeah.
You say this just came out?
The second book just came out in August, so that was Magpie's Fall, and then Magpie's Flight will hopefully be out sometime in 2019, depending if I can get my editor lined up for it.
Now, Jane was talking about conventions. Do you go to conventions to promote these books, or what do you do to get the word out there, Allison?
I was just at World Fantasy Con, which was in Baltimore this year. I didn't go for any particular panels, but I did go and do some signings and whatnot. You try to talk it up as much as you can, obviously, in those types of things. But no, I'm really bad at marketing, so I'm just gonna be right up front and very blunt.
Me too.
I think that's a running theme for all of the publishing world. We're good at the writing part. The rest of it, we just kind of suck at. Some of us get luckier than others.
Yeah, I've tried a number of different things, of course, you know, and I'm throw money at publicists and whatnot, and that's always you know, probably could have done something else with my money at that point. $3,000 I could have saved.
Oh, ouch.
Damn.
Yeah, my son keeps harassing me about going out to San Diego Comic-Con, and I you know, I have to take him before he graduates from college. Because I know he wants to meet you, Jonathan, because you're the one who got him to read.
Cool.
I got the Rock and Ruin series, and you sent me the sign plates, and the kid devoured them, and that was wonderful.
If you bring him out, I will get him a pass.
Okay. Well, we're trying to.
I'll come out too.
Jane has now become Jane's adoptive son.
Jane, will you be my mommy?
No. You're too much of a problem child.
I was like, we'll break you in, Jason, at Phoenix.
San Diego Comic Con is very much worth going to. It's one of my favorite events of the year. I've been going to it since we moved to San Diego. We've lived in Del Mar, which is near San Diego. We've lived here. It's our sixth year now. And I've been going to Comic-Con every year, and it is amazing. It's less insane than New York Comic-Con, which I love New York Comic-Con, but it's a smaller venue, whereas San Diego, it gets a spill outside, and San Diego, you know, the weather is never bad here. And so there's events going on all the hotels, and it just, it's like the whole city turns into Comic-Con. It's really a delight. So really recommend it.
And San Diego is a very pretty city. I visited it when I was, I had a software company that I was visiting out there. So I loved it when we went.
Yeah. Well, does not suck.
Yes, it does not suck.
Well, and some friends of ours, from Joe Compton and Josh Pantelaresco, have been trying to scheme with us on trying to do a show out at San Diego Comic-Con sometime. And I'm like, man, that'd be amazing, but how in the hell are we going to get into San Diego Comic-Con? You know, their list is 10 miles long. So that would be amazing to go out there, though.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
We'll, and talk. I might be able to help with that.
It's on the bucket list for sure. And you awesome. Can always sleep in the van. That's the plan.
I told my son he could be my cameraman.
There you go. Perfect.
You know, that's what I did at Grand Rapids Comic Con and at the Ace Chicago Comic Con is I brought my kids and my wife with me, and my wife was cameraman for a couple days, and one of my oldest was cameraman for a couple days. I'm like, yeah, see, that way we're enjoying the Comic Con and I'm getting work done.
I call those working vacations because you have so much fun going to these events, but you are getting a lot of work done at the same time. So it's kind of a perfect balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the conventions, Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, Dragon-Con, a few others, aside from the stuff you're doing with the public panels and signings and all, it's also a lot of stuff goes on behind the scenes. A lot of meetings go on between you and publishers or producers and so on. So you are working, and a lot of it is part of the marketing too, because it's a great degree of visibility. You make a lot of useful contacts, and you know, you get to become part of a community of professionals as opposed to, you know, simply a fan going there. And that kind of deepens your footprint both as an author and as a professional within that community. And there's nothing like being on the ground and being there with real people.
Well, you know, and that brings up a question I want to ask you, since you are a successful author and you've been to a fair amount of conventions, it sounds like, you know, my experience at conventions has been as going as press. I've never been in Artist Alley sitting behind a booth, but I had such a blast going as press and being able to talk to whoever I wanted just for the hell of it. And then I was thinking, man, you know, I really feel like I'm getting a lot more out of this than I would be if I'm just trying to, you know, hawk books for 10 bucks a piece. But I don't know if that's the right attitude. You know, have you ever been a bookseller there, or do you usually go to speak or sign?
I try never to sell my own stuff at events. I prefer, you know, to leave that to booksellers, professional booksellers, or friends. You know, sometimes I have friends who set up a table, and they'll have some books there, and I'll maybe go into a signing or two. But I like actually being more involved. I don't want to be anchored anywhere. I try to get on a fair number of panels. I love panels. I'm a panel junkie, because that's one of the best ways of, A, meeting other colleagues, getting to know them and their viewpoints and their insights into the biz, but also it's one of the best ways to interact with the fans. And without the readers, we are hobbyists. So I, you know, at panels, you get to talk to them. You get to meet them before, during, and after. And also when you're anchored to a table, you're only going to see the people who come to your table. There's a whole lot more to every one of these conventions. Sometimes I'll just go wander around and see what happens. And often there's a little bit of a serendipity effect where you run into somebody, you start a conversation, and it turns out that person and you could maybe do some business, or they want you for a cover quote, or you want them to be in one of your anthologies. There's a lot that can happen if you keep playing in traffic, but less that can happen if you're sitting on the side. Not that nothing can happen, because I have friends who have a lot of success with what goes on in their around their booths, but I personally like to be involved. I like to be out there playing in traffic.
So you like to be more of a dynamic part of the convention rather than a static piece of it.
Yeah, and sometimes that means instigating. You know, you go up in, and I'll shamelessly go up and join a conversation, even though I'm not invited to it. Just, hey, I'm Jonathan, you know, can I crash your conversation? Sometimes that works. Sometimes they give you looks like you're something, a side dish they hadn't ordered, but, you know.
Well, you know, if there's any place that's going to work, it's going to be at a comic convention. Because
right. Do it when you're randomly on the street, not quite as effective. But at comic cons, especially if there's a mixer or an event, just starting a conversation. It doesn't always have to be what we call the badge-oriented conversation, where you go up and look at somebody's badge and then decide whether there's somebody you should talk to. Sometimes you just start a conversation with somebody. I do it a lot with cosplayers, too. Like last year, I saw this group doing the most phenomenal Black Panther cosplay. And I used to write the Black Panther comic. So, you know, I went over and had a conversation with them. The group had no idea that there was a white guy writing Black Panther in the last 10 years. And I was a white guy writing Black Panther for 2 years. In fact, I wrote the feminist Black Panther because Shuri was the Panther, not T'Challa, during my run.
Oh, and, seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. It was the
awesome.
So we had that conversation and suddenly we're all friends and we're swapping business cards and talking and I'm getting to know the people inside the costume and getting to know why they chose that costume and how they got involved. It's so much fun to get involved with everyone there.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, Allison, what about you? What have your experiences at conventions been like?
I haven't been to San Diego. I have been to New York Comic Con several times. I've been on a couple of panels over the years there. I like the big ones like that. But for me, they can be kind of overwhelming because there is just so much to see and to do. And sometimes when you're going and you're on the panels and you're working, sometimes I would actually prefer just to not be on them, just so I can just kind of go sit and like look at everything that's going around. But for when my original series came out, that had more romance involved with it. So I was pretty heavily into like the RWA and the RT conventions. And those are definitely much different than what you would find at a Comic-Con. They are more professionally based, and the panels tend to be more either writer or, you know, author based panels. World Fantasy Con also is, I would say, is more of a professional con. There's no cosplayers, no one dressing around.
Boo.
Boo, I know, right? So sometimes it's more fun. I did go to a smaller convention a few years ago, Nikon, which is, I don't know if...
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to that one a couple years ago, and it was very small, but I'll tell you what, it really was one of the best cons I've ever been to.
What is it?
It's Nikon. It's like New England convention. It's like for horror writers.
Oh, sweet.
And it's very small, but it's...
Like, it's in New England? Why don't I know about that?
I live every year, and... And it was one of the most surreal experiences of my life, and I really want to go back. So I'm hoping to go back either this year or next year. So,
where was it held?
Is it Providence? I think it's in Providence.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's where I went to Comic-Con in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where my daughter went to school. So,
yeah.
And a lot of what happens at Nikon stays at Nikon.
Stays there, yeah. It's pretty surreal. There are some things that I was just like, wow, I can't believe I just did that. But oh, great.
Well, no, well, that sounds...
Providence is like that, though.
That sounds awesome, though. You know, and I write horror and thrillers, and so I always kind of find myself out of place because it seems like everywhere I go, people are writing paranormal romance and stuff like that. I'm like, you guys are like really happy, and I'm really kind of messed up in my brain, and I need some dark people.
You know, it's funny. The I don't know if you've ever been to StokerCon, which is the horror writers, you know, convention. I've found that the horror crowd tends to be the most well-balanced because, you know, better out than in. And and they also, they understand each other. They really get each other. They're writing horrors, horror thrillers, and so on. And it's a really welcoming crowd. And and StokerCon's a wonderful event. I'll be actually MC this year, which is it's not going to be as much fun as I thought as it sounds because the guy who had been MC, Jeff Strand, is a stand-up comic, and I'm not. And
you can do this. You can do it.
Come on.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I may bomb, or I just might go and have fun and the hell with it. But
I'm sure it'll be fine.
You'll be fine. I mean, I remember you back at Backspace when you were doing the panels on weapons and you know, a pencil to be a weapon.
That's the thing about cons, and you know, there are cons for everything, and there are cons for everyone. You know, you can go to some cons and feel completely like a fish out of water. Like for example, if I went to RT, you know, it's funny. I've spoken at romance writers like monthly meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, how I would rock the actual con experience because even though they're romantic scenes, I haven't written a romance novel.
Right.
So that wouldn't necessarily be the fertile ground for me to go and do the right kind of marketing. But, you know, BoucherCon or StokerCon, DragonCon, you know, those are closer to my wheelhouse. And you find there are always going to be people who are accepting of you because they're in the same headspace as you. And it's really nice to be around others of your species.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole I found my people thing. That's one of the most common threads that you hear about from pretty much anybody who's gone to a convention. Is the people, they're so different, they're so welcoming, they're so accepting, and it makes you, even if you're an introvert, feel okay with, you know, kind of coming out of your shell and talking to other people.
Yeah, and panels are good for that too, because you do a panel, There's this feeling when you first do a panel that, oh my God, I'm going to flub it. But here's the thing is the people who are filling the seats already have accepted you as an expert. Doesn't matter what level of expertise, they already accept you as an expert. So all you need to do is talk about what you do and why it's fun and what you can share. You've already sold the crowd before you've opened your mouth. So it's actually a pretty enriching experience for writers to be able to do panels, because you're not having to sell yourself. It's already been sold, you know, and that makes a much more fun experience.
Yeah, I was terrified on my first panel, and it soon became clear that I didn't need to be terrified. You're right, you know, the people were accepting, but it was just like the first time public speaking, and doing this is hard for me anyway, but I do it because it gets me over that hump. you know, but it's, you're right. It's just like, wow, okay, I can speak to these people.
Because also they understand what you're saying.
Right. I
mean, it would be different. Like when you're doing a sit and sign in a bookstore and it's people walking in, you have to cold sell to people who've never heard of you. That's tough. Yeah. But when it's a sci-fi crowd or a fantasy or romance, I mean, we all speak the same language at those gigs. So we're speaking to someone who really gets us and who we get. So it's very comfortable.
Yeah, and that makes a big difference for with everything, because you're not trying to tailor everything so that everyone understands. But I kind of want to derail us real quick, because we have somebody who's been chatting with us here on YouTube. Onyx Pendant says, "It's awesome to see something like this. I've been an aspiring writer for a number of years, starting and scrapping hundreds of projects, trying to make something perfect." And Onyx, I know how that feels, but we have some really great writers on tonight. Is there any way we could take a minute or two and just try to give some advice to Onyx here, who's been starting and scrapping projects for years?
Sure. Allison, you want to jump in on that?
As far as writing and scrapping projects for years? I would just say, I mean, obviously, however long it takes you to write a piece, the one thing that I see with a lot of aspiring authors, you know, when they say, I can write a short story, but I can't write a longer novel. How do I do that? I keep rewriting the same two or three chapters over and over and over again, trying to make them perfect. And I always try to tell them and say, you just got to write the bones of a story down, however long it happens to be. And then you can go back and you can edit and fix it up as you need to. Because sometimes even when I'm writing something and I'm looking at it and it's like, God, this is such a hot mess. This is like the worst thing I've ever written. It's pure garbage. But then you get to the end of it and you're like, okay, so now I can actually go back and there is actually a gem in here that I can work with. So for people who, you know, if you're constantly writing and rewriting, it is a learning experience, but you just kind of have to get out there and do it, and then, you know, go back and rework it as you need to.
So, you gotta push through and finish it.
Yeah.
Everything that you write, whether it becomes a successful piece or not, is training you to write. You're constantly learning how to write by writing. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if every piece gets finished or out the door. It matters that you write with consistency, and also try to, I guess the hardest skill for a writer isn't so much the craft of writing, it's the craft of self-evaluation. We are so bizarrely the wrong choice to evaluate our own writing most of the time. We're either too harsh or too forgiving. And, you know, that isn't really what we need to be. We just need to write the damn thing, rewrite it, let someone else look at it, get it out the door, go to something else, and, you know, not worry about something being perfect, because I have never seen a perfect bit of writing. God knows my own is not. But, you know, like if people were to read the first draft from any best-selling author, they would think that person had an aneurysm of because our first are appalling. It's equivalent, actually, of if you go to look at a beautiful vase, you know, that you buy, beautiful clay vase that's been, you know, fired and painted, it's beautiful, but the first draft is the lump of clay on the potter's wheel that's just vaguely looking like it's round. That's the first draft. It doesn't have to be anything more than that. Everything else is revision. So, you know, my advice to most young writers, most emerging writers, is finish something. Doesn't matter how bad it is. Reward yourself for having done it, because that's a big milestone. And then take the elements of revision one at a time. Do voice, do figurative language, do paste. You know, take each skill set one at a time and go back and clean it up in as many times, as many passes as it takes. Then get it out the door and then do the next thing. And stop worrying about doing the perfect thing, and don't worry about whether your idea is great or not. You're probably not the best judge of that.
That's 100% true. And I think that hopefully what you take from that is that you just got to push through and write the darn story. You know, whether it's short or long, it doesn't matter. You just try to finish it. There's another little short video up on our page, Onyx, if you want to look at it. It's in our 5-minute writing tips. And I'm actually talking about how to start a story. And one method that I use, especially if I'm feeling not especially inspired, is I start with one scene and that's it. And I just write that scene as well as I possibly can, and kind of flush out my characters that way, get a feel for the voice of the story, and move on. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then it doesn't, you know, but you just get it written.
I use the trick of I write the ending first, and then I back up and aim at the ending. Sometimes I have no idea what the story is going to be until I just write the ending, some weird friggin' ending.
Back up. I was going to say, yours would be pretty odd starting out that way.
Yeah. No, I've done that before, too. I think I did that with the last book that, you know, Katie wants to, like, shoot me for.
When I started doing the endings first, I speeded up. I mean, my first book took me 3.5 years to write. Now I'm writing a book every 3 to 4 months and a short story in 2 days. So generally, if I write the ending first, I can just back up and aim at that ending without wasting a lot of time writing scenes that don't belong to that ending. If I start at the beginning, I tend to write a lot of stuff that doesn't belong because I'm not really entirely sure what the ending is, even if I've plotted it. Because once you get inside, the book feels different than what the plot looks like. So that's another method. There's a lot of ways of doing it right.
So do you plot, or are you more of a panster, or a combination of both?
Plot.
Okay.
Panster.
Yeah, I'm trying to do both.
The only exception is with the webcomic, because I have an artist who has to draw it, and I don't want to sit there and, like, be, oops, all those 20 pages you just drew, no, we can't use them now. I've decided to change this. So I plot out each chapter. I don't plot out. I know vaguely where we're going to end up. That's usually how it goes. But the new Abby Sinclair book that I'm writing is 100% pantsing. I have no idea where this is going. I'm just going.
And that's kind of fun too, doing that way. I mean, writing for discovery and finding cool new stuff. And that's what I've always done. And that's what Katie does. And then I told her last month, I just recently started using a Scrivener. Mm-hmm. And because I started using it, I started seeing how easy it would be to actually plot something out and put my scenes where I want them to go. And so now I'm attempting a novel doing it this way. And I'll tell you what, it's 2 months into it, I've already written twice as fast as I ever have before. So I'm not saying that it's that plotting is absolutely the way to go, but it seems to be working right now.
Well, there are a lot of ways of doing it right, as I said, but the reason I like plotting, to me, a plot is like a mathematical formula of cause and effect. But just because I've written the plot out does not mean the plot is the only way to tell the story. You cannot reasonably expect to have all your best ideas on the day that you write your plot outline. That's an irrational thought. So I look at it, the example I use is, it's a trellis. The plot is a trellis. I know that I want to grow roses up that trellis, but I don't know exactly how they're going to look once they're in bloom. There's going to be an organic change. As things happen within the writing of the story, you allow for change. So there is the pantsing effect to a degree within the story for me, where, you know, something will happen, I'll say, wow, that's cool, let me follow that, even though it's not part of my idea. But I do like knowing the structure, because it gets me to the end of it faster and with fewer things that I later have to cut out. And that's kind of an important thing for me, because of the deadlines that I have. I can't have an extra couple of months to go in and rewrite the story I have to get something that at the end of it that's essentially the shape I need it to be. But everyone has a different method. I mean, there are no wrong ways to do it except the way that doesn't get it done.
Yeah, it's the best advice right there. Yeah, do it whatever way works for you. Yep. For me, I don't do the plotting thing. I find if I plot, I end up backing myself into a corner. So I adopted the to-do list method. And I just write a little to-do list of what I need the characters to do to get to the end of the story. And I just check it off as I go.
Cool.
Yeah. I do a rough outline as well. And although sometimes the characters divert from it and I just go where they want me to go. So...
And Allison's point about comics, you know, when I write comics, I have to turn in an outline. I have to tell the entire story and the beats for where they're going to fall on the page. So I have no choice but to do outlines for that stuff. And I'm back to writing comics after a 2-year break. And, you know, the artist needs to be able to start planning what he's going to do, because often there's research. Like if I'm going to set a lot of the comic in Manhattan, the artist is going to have to start looking for parts of Manhattan to draw that work with his or her art style, et cetera. So, you know, there are times you need to be adaptive in how you approach your structure.
And the way you write will change as you continue to write too.
Oh, of course.
You know, you start off writing one way and you find that new methods work for you, or they work better for, like you said, different mediums require different ways of writing. So as long as you're flexible with it, you can continue to adapt your style as you write that next book.
Yeah, I'm not the same writer. I'm writing my 35th novel. I'm not the same writer now as I was when I wrote my first. That guy knew less about writing than I do. But at the same time, he had different things that interested him, so he wrote the book that was the most entertaining for him. I'm a different guy, so I'm writing the books most entertaining for me. And I imagine that's true for all of us. You know, we evolve.
Now, is that something that you just brought up a good point. So do you write to market, or do you write what you want to read? Do you write what you love?
Who's the question for?
It's for you, Jonathan.
A little bit of both. I mean, I pitch ideas that I love, but I pitch them to my agent, and my agent will tell me which ones she thinks are most marketable. Writers are seldom short of ideas. So if I have 2 or 3 book ideas, and I'll say, well, you know, I'd like these ideas, which one's going to sell? The agent will usually, either she knows offhand, or she'll do some research. Maybe she'll talk to my editor if it's for a particular house. And then I write the book that's going to sell best. At the same time, there are projects that I really, really want to do. And I kind of try to shoehorn those into the arrangements I have with my agent, and sometimes I win and she'll say, okay, let me pitch it. And sometimes I won't, because she says that will never sell for enough money. So I don't want to do that. And I do this for a living. So I kind of have to be smart. Like if I made, you know, bell-bottom pants, I could love bell-bottom pants. I could really do them great, but they're not selling right now. So
I'd buy them from you, buddy.
You would have other people, and then I would have to start robbing liquor stores to pay the bills.
Allison, what about you? You know, from what you said about your current projects, it sounds like you write more from the heart and less based.
I would probably do better if I actually just picked a genre and stuck with it. Even the series, the Abby Sinclair series, which, you know, Simon & Schuster did put those out, but that kind of metamorphosed, you know, I wrote it at the time, the original series, as sort of a paranormal romance. And then when it got picked up, they're like, we really want to make this more urban fantasy. So we need to, like, you know, they made me tweak a lot of it to fit the market at that point. So even though I had already written, you know, one and a half of the books, when I sold the second and third book, had to be completely, you know, recategorized based off of what my editor had wanted with this indie series. It's kind of nice just being able to you know what, I can put whatever I want right smack in the middle of it and I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I'm actually writing another book as well for my agent, which should hopefully fit in a narrow, you know, like a box, a fantasy file. So they can say, here's this new fantasy. So, you know where to put it. But I don't know. I don't fit in boxes very well. None of my writing fits very well, so I have a very hard time when they say it must be like this. I'm like, but
I just say I write paranormal suspense. Everything else, every other genre can fit into there, but paranormal suspense. Stuff doesn't have happy for now.
Thriller. I just throw the word thriller at the end of everything, and then they seem to think, well, that's okay. It's a horror thriller. It's a suspense thriller. It's a this. I just put the word, you know, if I wrote a pokey little puppy novel, you know.
I like that idea.
I don't always write for a too narrow a market. Sometimes I write, like, my weird science thrillers, my Joe Ledger thrillers. I mean, they started off with a zombie apocalypse, and by book 7, he was dealing with Cthulhu, but it's still marketed as weird science or action thriller, right? Because there's enough of that in there. So sometimes you can sneak in a lot of stuff, as long as there's stuff that makes them feel comfortable enough that they can say it's this genre, and then you just mess with them.
Well, Patient Zero has my favorite opening of all time. I love the opening of that book.
Same terrorist twice in 1 week. There's either something wrong with the world or something wrong with my skills, and there's nothing wrong with my skills.
Yeah.
That's the opening chapter.
Yeah, the opening of the first chapter, it was like so great.
That was one of those things that occur to you in the shower, you know.
Yeah.
Or while you're driving.
Now, Katie, you look busy over there. Are you on KDP adding thriller to the end of every title? Right,
yeah,
now?
Absolutely. and speculative fiction, that's another favorite buzzword to use, because that brings a lot of genres into it.
Mm-hmm. Everything is speculative fiction now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry for the interruption. I know you probably saw. I couldn't find the mute, but my daughter came in because this is where her food is.
It's important. Priorities.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Jonathan doesn't know. I'm at a, today we had a memorial service for my brother-in-law. Why I'm in Tennessee. So we have a house full of 50 people back there at my sister-in-law. So.
And my condolences.
Thank you. So this is my sanity hour and a half.
Third bar for sanity. Holy crap.
Right?
It goes back to being with your people. This is that moment of being with your people.
Absolutely. Jason's laughing at me.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering what Jonathan's flipping around that looks like a tentacle.
Oh, it's
tentacles.
Oh, yeah. He's like, he has so many toys in there. It's like...
Goal.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't have any toys. I'm sorry.
Was that a snow globe skull?
It is, with gold.
Oh. Yeah. My God, you didn't know they made those.
I didn't either. I got it for Christmas a couple years ago, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, that's cool.
I need one of those right back there on the table.
Also, hold on, I grab this too, because Allison mentioned steampunk.
Oh, yes.
Steampunk octopus.
Oh, I like your octopus. That's awesome.
I got this at Liberty Con in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Very cool.
Yeah. That's where a lot of my toys come from, is conventions. I love wandering through the vendors' aisles and seeing what weird crap they have. And then trying to do that math between how much I want to buy and what will fit in my luggage weight allowance.
Yep.
Oh, man. They have the coolest stuff at the conventions. I saw a lady that was, she was peddling her leatherware, and she was dressed in a full dragon costume, but it was all made out of these small little pieces of leather riveted together. It's like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I was like, how much is that? She was like, you mean for the whole thing? I was like, yeah. She was like, I don't even have a price for that. It took me like 10 years. Oh, okay.
Oh, is that Cthulhu?
In a Hawaiian shirt with a hat and sandals.
Oh, wow.
That's where he goes on vacation.
Yeah, well, he's moving to California with me, so it's...
You know, what I feel you need, Jonathan, is, you know, those knitted beards that people make? I think you need one of those that's actually Cthulhu tentacles.
They have one.
He has one?
No, he might, but they do have those Cthulhu.
He does. See?
Oh my God, he does have one.
It's on a skull.
Yeah, I saw that on the shelf. Every time he's talking, I'm looking at the shelf behind him going, oh, that's really cool.
There are some odd things on my shelves.
Yes.
That's fun. I'm as a writer, you are a professional daydreamer, but also a professional adolescent because you're playing, you know, playing what if or making up as you go all day long. So,
oh yeah,
I buy something like this. I take it off of my taxes as research.
Of course, it is.
Yeah, research. It's
anyway,
all of those things.
So much for the sober weight and dignity of being a writer.
Oh, come on. It's fun. It's fun making up shit. I don't get to do that in my day job.
Jane, I totally derailed your comic convention conversation you were having. I don't even remember what you were talking about now, but if you want to go back to that.
this is fun. I'm smiling, I'm laughing, so it's good.
Well, actually, let me throw a question in. What are you, for all you guys, what's your favorite convention to go to? Or what was your favorite convention to go to?
For me, I mean, I went to Rhode Island Comic Con with my son. And just because I went with him, that was probably the best one. And the only other one I went to was the Backspace conferences.
Backspace.
Which I enjoyed, but it wasn't. You know, it was with all, you know, the writers, but it wasn't the fun things of Comic-Con, which is like novelty.
Fan-based.
Yes. Yeah. So
I haven't ventured out of the Midwest, but I had a lot of fun at Chicago and Grand Rapids. They were super cool. At Grand Rapids, I was actually able to book a lot more authors to talk to sit down and talk to. So I had a good time with that. But I'm going to be going to Paracon, which is Paranormal Con, up in the Upper Peninsula later this year, which is supposed to be just a blast. So I can't wait to do it because all the guys from all the Ghost Hunter shows will be there, and tons of horror writers and paranormal, you know, writers will be there. And so I'm really looking forward to that because I like cool, creepy ghost stories and stuff like that. So I'm feeling like that's going to be my favorite, hopefully.
Allison?
From just a personal non-writer person, I go to a lot of anime conventions.
Oh, cool.
So that's a completely different group of fans and a whole another structure. But I mean, for the novelty of it, and my kids watch a lot of anime, and, you know, we went to Japan this summer and all this great stuff. So I definitely enjoy going to those from, you know, just a regular comic book convention. New York Comic Con was definitely, like, for me, it was the best just because it was very, very big. Although there was one in Philly I went to a couple of years ago, and I got to meet Chris Hemsworth, so that was actually really good too. From a lady perspective, I got a picture with him, so that worked out really well. But from a professional writer standpoint, I do have to say that Nikon was definitely my favorite. So, because just a totally different vibe, and I don't even
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, you do.
You know, it's right in my backyard, basically, on Connecticut and Rhode Island.
Definitely. It's definitely a different animal altogether. So,
maybe.
Actually, Spilling Ink got started because of Comic-Con, oddly enough. I live in Vegas, and Vegas doesn't get a lot of the big ones, but we did have Wizard World come through a couple years ago, and just through shooting the breeze with another author, unfortunately, he's not here today. Our other co-host, our wayward co-host, David and I talked about, you know, both of us had issues with public speaking. Both of us wanted to talk more about the indie community. And that's how Spilling Ink got started. And because of that, I've been able to go to a couple of different Comic Cons. I've been able to panel at the Phoenix Comic Con, which has an excellent writer's track. I love it if I can get on panels there. And I've been trying to branch out more because of doing the show, because we're working on getting over that fear of public speaking. So Comic-Con has played a really big role in what we're doing today.
Cool. Yeah, for me, it's, I mean, San Diego, of course, is one of the best, but I always love Dragon Con in Atlanta.
Oh, I
want
to go to that.
I want to go one year.
Fan base. It's a fan-run con, and it has the best cosplay. I mean, most cons have like 1 in 5 cosplayers. This is like 1 in 2. It's a ridiculously high cosplay. Best steampunk cosplay anywhere, and I'm a big fan of steampunk cosplay. And it's just tons of fun. I've been doing it for close to 10 years now, and it's great. But also, some of the regional cons, the smaller ones, are a lot of fun. You know, my first one was Philadelphia PhilCon, and Balticon was great. I like some of the smaller ones. There was one in Kansas I went to. I'm going to totally blank on the name of that one, but it was really great con a couple of years ago. But sometimes the smaller ones allow you to make friends among your colleagues a little more. You have to sit and have a conversation with them, and you know, get to know who else is out there. Break down the lines that sometimes the larger cons try to put between either you and the fans or between traditional and indie published authors. You know, where for some reason they want to separate us, and we should all be actually together having a conversation together because we're all writers. And the smaller cons and the regional cons allow that and even encourage that. So I'm a big fan of those.
Thank you. Jason, do you have any other? I see you mulling things over.
No, you know, that's my thoughtful face. It often looks like I'm constipated, but I'm just thinking. That's all it is. But no, you know, I'll tell you what, last year, and, you know, Katie and Jane, who are on the show, of course, know that. I mean, I can be a personality here on our show, but I am a very anxious, nervous person when I'm out in the real world. And through these ladies and a couple of our guests who really kind of pushed me beyond my breaking point, and kind of forced me out into the world, I've really had a lot of fun going to the conventions. And, you know, now I go out and I interview authors on site and in their homes or at libraries or wherever it is. And I'm having so much fun doing it. And I'm like, wow, you know, this, it's not that bad. It's still scary out here. And for all of you newer writers out there, it will be scary at first, but you're going to get through it. And the next time it's going to be even better and you're going to have more fun. And I think that the more fun that we have as guests or attending authors or whatever we're going to a Comic-Con as, I think the more we're going to be able to connect with the fans and with readers and other professionals in our field. And I think that that's a really good thing because, like Jonathan said, we really should all be together because that's the way we're going to connect. That's the way we're going to have that fellowship. And that's how we're going to learn. Jonathan knows things that I don't know. I haven't experienced that.
Everyone here knows things that all of us don't know. And that's what networking is all about. We get to share that. And as a result, we all get to move forward more. So good.
Yeah. Point. There's no need to hoard knowledge. We can all share it. We can all grow from it.
Yep.
One of the beauties of doing panels, especially if you're scared shitless to do them, because those first few panels you do, it's going to happen. Is once you're up there and you're sitting with the others and, you know, you're getting that feeling of these are my people, I don't have to be scared. Then you can kind of let in the inspiration too. I, at Phoenix, when I was doing panels there, I went in like shaking, so scared to be up there. And I walked away with a book idea. And from that, I wrote my Agents of Asset series over the last year, all because I sat in on a panel for, I think it was Gods and Mythology.
Nice.
And it was awesome. And it was meeting new friends and just absorbing all of their knowledge that was excellent and so inspirational.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My very first big ticket panel, I was terrified. You know, it was at Dragon Con. It was one of my very first times at Dragon Con. And they put me on a panel with Laurel Hamilton, Kevin Anderson, Jim Butcher, possibly George R. R. Martin and somebody else, and me. And
no pressure.
Did you put on your Cthulhu mask?
No one had yet heard of me. It was a New York Times bestseller panel. I had just made the list for the first time, but making the list and being known as a bestseller, they're not the same thing, you know. Some of you say, "Oh, who are you? Are you the moderator?" I'm like, no, I'm not the moderator.
Oh, damn.
But What's interesting is all of those people are friends of mine now. And that's one of the things that happens with panels. They hear you talk, and it doesn't matter what level of success you've had. They hear you talk, they hear your passion and love for what we do and your respect for the people in the audience, and they get you. And then suddenly there's connections made. And that's a beautiful thing. Oh, Charlene Harris was on the panel too. It was quite an event. And I was shaking in my boots, but you know, we all have to go through that first thing, that first panel.
Yeah, I have no memory of what I said on my first panel. All I know is my subject was writing sex scenes.
Do we have a recording of that?
Those are the most fun panels to sit in on, I'm telling you.
Oh, we need a recording of that so that I can broadcast that later.
You can make fun of me.
Well, you know what? Speaking of panels, you know what I'm really looking forward to, Katie, is coming out to Phoenix in a few months here and seeing the look on you and Jenna's faces when somebody hands me a microphone to talk in front of people. It's going to be glorious because you're not going to know what the hell is going to come out of my mouth.
And I'm already talking to the coordinator there to see if we can't get on some panels. So
did you shoot in that message?
Yes.
Good.
Fingers
Good.
Crossed.
Nice.
All right. Well, we're kind of winding down to the end of our hour here. Is there anything else we want to talk about tonight, guys?
How about where everyone's going to be next? Because I'd hope to run into you guys.
Yeah. Well, Katie and I are going to be. Wait. Jane, are you coming out to Phoenix as well or no?
No, not this year. No.
Okay. Okay.
I have a cruise at the end of the year. And
oh, yeah. No, I got gotcha, you. Yeah. I got gotcha. You. But yeah. No, Katie and I will be at Phoenix Fan Fusion, and that's the end of May, right, Katie?
Yeah, usually it's Memorial Weekend.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where we'll be. What about you, Allison?
I'm going to be at KatsuCon in February, which is an anime convention. So that's the only thing I currently have on my schedule this year so far. sorry, I'm kind of lame in that regard. Just a lot. It's just harder because I, you know, trying to plan around the kids' schedules and all this other junk. It's like sometimes it's very hard to be like, hey, hon, I'm going to leave for like a week to go. Party, you know. Oh, LA. Sorry,
I just had that fight with my wife about Phoenix.
Well, my day job is going to get pretty intense with stuff. So getting away from there is going to be a nightmare. I work as a business analyst in a major major insurance company 4 more years and so I'm a part-time writer, so
cool.
But it's like a full-time thing and have been for a while, so this year getting away is going to be sticky. So I have nothing on the calendar, but I keep looking at Rhode Island Comic Con and saying, or I think there's a horror con in Danbury, which is where my son goes to school. So I was like, oh, maybe I could go there. So.
Cool.
Well, what about you, Jonathan? Aside from San Diego, do you have any big events planned?
It's going to be a busy year. Most of my stuff's on my website, on the appearances thing, jonathanmaber.com. But yeah. Coming up soon will be Emerald City Comic Con. In Seattle and FanX in Salt Lake. I think the next big ones are coming up. And Emerald City, we're hoping to do our first V-Wars panel. So we're talking about getting some of the actors up there, hoping Ian will come up. And Laura Vandervoort and Adrian Holmes, I think, are all interested so far. So that could be a whole bunch of fun.
Oh, that would be so awesome. Cool. Yeah.
It's very surreal for me because, I mean, they're used to it. They've done shows and shows and shows. And for me, this is my first, so... I'm not entirely sure I'll be speaking coherent English on the panel.
Well, if you just hide behind Ian, he'll take care of everything.
Yeah, well, he's this big, but they will all be. it's gonna be a fun year. So
that's awesome.
Sounds it.
Well, cool. Well, Jane, do you kind of want to wrap us up tonight? And then if you two wouldn't mind, hang out for a minute after the broadcast is done. And we do want to chat with you for a minute.
Sure.
This has been Spilling Ink with Jonathan Mayberry and Allison Pang and Katie and Jason and I. And thank you very much for joining us.
Did you forget Katie's last name?
No. Did I not say it? I'm very, very...
She's my God, I
just said it again. No, Katie's name.
Oh, well, thank you everyone for watching tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure you hit the like button or the subscribe button if you liked it. That way, no, not next week. Wait, do we have a show next week?
I will not be here. Remember, I'm gone for the rest of the month.
Yeah, you're gone. We know it. Yeah, but well, Jane and I will be back soon.
Yeah, I think you asked me next week to be here. So, and I said yes.
And I'll be technology free, so I won't even be able to check in.
Well, Katie will be with us in spirit. Hopefully she'll be catching some rays in Hawaii. So, all right, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.